Hello and welcome to Fantasy Life Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Hart. It's a great day to be great. It's a great day to, you know, talk about a few final outstanding questions before legal tampering season finally takes place. Joining me, as always, on this lovely edition of our questions pod, none other than Fantasy Life's finest director of analytics, all-around baller, Dwayne The Rock McFarlane. What's up, Dwayne?
What's up? I hit my mic. It was moving all around. I guess that's the kind of show it's going to be. You're going to be moving and shaking hard. It's like you always are. So, you know, you always keep me on my toes. But yeah, man, things are good. It's raining here. So, yeah, getting the grass nice and wet, getting ready for that hot summer in Texas. And, you know, we got to get it all watered ahead of time.
Shake and bake. You are correct on that, Dwayne. It's been a, you know, pouring lovely Columbus, Ohio all week after randomly getting like a 70 degree day there on a Sunday. So as always, you know, I will say, Dwayne, I don't respect meteorologists very much because they give us this ridiculous percentage chance of stuff happening and they never have to face any consequences of it. It'd be like being a fantasy analyst, being wrong all the time, and then just continuously pointing back the process without any, you know, sort of critiques for your
results. Like a beat reporter, like that Michael Thomas is going off on, you know? I mean, it could be like that as well.
That whole thing, just real quick, it is kind of it's weird to come out and say like sources, the Saints are releasing Michael Thomas when if they, cause like that, this is the hilarious tweet. Like this is the way the Saints kind of get around the salary cap a lot of these years. If Michael Thomas was still on the Saints by, I believe the third day of the new league year, they would owe him over $100 million in bonuses. So from that standpoint, I'm kind of with him. Like he was on a de facto 1 year deal.
Right. So. Yeah, I'm with you. I think it's kind of funny how the whole thing blows up. But I also understand both sides. Like if I was an athlete, you know, we even get it sometimes, you know, for the most part, I have thick skin. Don't worry about it too much on social media. But every once in a while, you know, like if somebody's coming at you over and over, like, you know, sometimes you just respond. You're like, okay, yeah. Like I'm going to like come back at you. And so we should expect it from the players. They're just human beings. And who wants to hear a bunch of negative stuff? Not that that was necessarily negative, but I understand where the athletes are coming from.
No, it's 100% true, man. Again, they probably face it. You know, they do face it a million times more than we do, but you can have 99 amazing people say great things about you. And just one person, whether they're true or not, you know, says one mean thing. Guess what you end up thinking about as you're trying to fall asleep a few hours later. But enough of that, everyone. Again, we have 8 solid questions today that I think will set us all up to be smarter and just more excited about the upcoming free agency cycle. So with that, Dwayne, let's get after it. Kicking things off with question number 1, where in the NFL could we feasibly get excited about my guy, Gerald Everett in Fantasyland? Dwayne, you've had some awesome just overall free agency kind of preview articles go out. And at tight end, man, I was trying to do my little article today. Jonnu Smith gets signed right as I'm about done with his question. We had Dalton Schultz sign with the Texans for a big money deal a couple days ago. So as much as, you know, I know, guys, told you a lot of things, a lot of real nice things. You could even call it propaganda about Gerald Everett over the years. I don't think it's a stretch, Dwayne, to actually call him the best remaining open free agent right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's a stretch at all. You know, has he ever truly lived up to any of the expectations that we've had for him? We know that he's an uber athletic guy. He's a guy that can do a lot after the catch, but he's just never landed in that situation, Ian, where he would truly get that every down type of role. And that takes a special kind of landing spot, right? You got to be on a team that's going to use mostly 11 personnel and use one tight end, and they're okay with their opponent knowing they're going to throw the ball no matter of down and distance or situation. So it needs to be a pass heavy team where they're not as worried about running the ball, because clearly coaching staffs think that Gerald Everett is not something they want on the field on, you know, critical rundowns. Like we've just seen it too much now in his career. So that's probably not going to change. So to me, that means that he's just got to have a really sweet landing spot. And it's tough to find that kind of thing. So I thought it was a really good question from you. You know, what are those landing spots that we could see for Gerald Everett? And it's kind of tough. Like if you think about like the criteria I just gave you, like we could easily go down the list and say, here are some teams that don't really have a tight end. And we could pick those, you know, of course, like also Zach Ertz signs yesterday. So the Commanders now have a tight end. So we've got that going for us. Like I was looking at Chicago, but like they've got Cole Kmet, Tampa Bay. I do think that Gerald Everett's a better receiving tight end than, you know, what we're dealing with, you know, right now in Tampa Bay. Yeah. Kate Otten. But like, are they going to be really committed to running 3 wide receivers all the time and not, you know, wanting to have a blocking tight end out there? Probably not. I mean, they've got a defensive minded head coach. So it gets really tricky, honestly. Like New Orleans already has a specialist like that and Juwan Johnson.
Yeah.
So I'm interested in your thoughts. I didn't have a clear cut answer on this one of, oh, this would be the place. Because I think he's definitely pigeonholed right now as a receiving tight end. So he needs to land somewhere on a staff that really wants to be a pass first offense.
There's two teams and only two teams that actually have triple digit vacated targets from their tight ends. Now, this is dependent on them going elsewhere in free agency. Again, this can all change. But it's the Cincinnati Bengals and some New England Patriots. So the Bengals, man.
Bengals would be the best because they are a pass first team. They want to throw the ball. They've got the quarterback. He's going to have major target competition. It's not like he would turn into – he wouldn't have a chance of suddenly being a 25% target share guy. No. But – like of those two landing spots, I would take the Bengals in a heartbeat, even though in New England, he could be the number one guy. There's just so many questions there.
So many questions in New England. And yeah, you know what, guys, you know, here's the shocking analysis we're giving you today. Joe Burrow, you know, greater than whoever winds up under center in New England here in 2024. With the Cincy thing too, like I just think the overall like NFL real life fit of Everett would help too, because yes, Jamar Chase, you know, whatever the hell you want him to do, he is incredible. But just overall on this Bengals team, if you look at it, the Bengals tight ends, you know, over these past few years, CJ Uzoma, Irv Smith, Drew Sample, those guys, they're only 26 in yards after the catch per reception again over these past two seasons. So beyond Jamar Chase and Chase Brown nowadays, I would just say they've kind of been missing this overall kind of yak specimen that Gerald Everett has been best at throughout his career, each of the past four seasons averaging over 5 yards after the catch per reception, top 10 marks each and every year along the way. And also, Dwayne, let's just face it, the dude's a swagger hound. He rocks number seven. He's got the dark visor out there. Like, this is a locker room boost, if anything. Come on, give me
that. What would that look like? You may not have it handy. What would that look like if you also took away the slot targets? Because slot wide receivers and tight ends are often vying for the same targets. And we know Tyler Boyd's most likely gone from Cincinnati as well.
Yeah.
So like the more I sit here and think about this one, like, yeah, not only do you have the tight end vacating, now they still have like Tanner Hudson. They have some guys they like. So I don't know for sure that Gerald Everett gets that full-time role, but if he did, and you also have, you know, a downgrade in the slot wide receiver, you know, potentially, then, you know, there's a little bit more that I could like about Gerald Everett.
And again, I don't expect him to go to Cincy and take a single target away from Jamar Chase or T. Higgins. We've seen this story with the Rams, with the Seahawks, and obviously most recently with the Chargers. But again, Dwayne, if we accept that, and I thought you did a really good job in the article spelling out the fact that Everett never has been this elite target earner. Okay, then it becomes, where can we expect him to get the most out of, you know, a 70 to 75 target workload? That would seemingly be Cincinnati. So again, without Dalton Schultz, Hunter Henry's out there, I guess, but, you know, really haven't seen that same kind of just elite version of him over these past 3 years in New England. I really do think Gerald Everett arguably is the single best tight end on the open market at the moment. Question number two, Dwayne, is about the, you know, previous number one tight end on the market. That is Dalton Schultz, who just signed a 3-year, I believe, $36 million deal to return to the Houston Texans. So before we get into this, you know, I had someone on Twitter again linking it to me, you know, and I deserve to apologize about 20 times for this, Dwayne, because Lord knows I, you know, was slandering Dalton Schultz about that many times last year. I could not have been more wrong about it, guys. Now we can talk about what the process was, right?
But the thing is, you weren't that wrong. The only thing you were really wrong on is you thought that Gerald Everett was going to outscore him.
Yeah.
Like you were a tad low on Dalton Schultz, but
tad low
overall, like he didn't have a great season considering what the other Texans did with CJ Stroud. Like if we compare Dalton Schultz to what we got out of Tank Dell and Nico Collins at their positions, then in my opinion, like Dalton Schultz underperformed. Like everybody's stock went up with CJ Stroud, but really Dalton Schultz's didn't. It still kind of went down from where it was with Dak. So, I mean, or you could at least say it was a status quo, right? Yeah. I mean, it was close to what we had gotten before. So I don't necessarily think you had it that wrong. It's just that you harped on him and his whole family the whole offseason. So, you know, you definitely put a cross on your back for that, my friend.
I was a dickhead about it, Dwayne. I deserve to get some pushback about it. So it's all good in the hood. And guess what? I'm in a dynasty startup, and I was happy to welcome Mr. Schultz to the squad last night. Tight end premium, like 11th or 12th round, man. We are feeling good with that selection. But yeah, again, my kind of two concerns were, one, I didn't think that Dalton Schultz really looked that much better than Jake Ferguson in Dallas. Spoiler, Jake Ferguson's pretty damn good too. And then number two, I just didn't really expect CJ Stroud to take the league by storm. Well, He did. And here we are, Dwayne Schultz now has the long-term deal that he did not have last year when he again signed just a one-year, $6 million contract. So the history, and I've talked about this before, but the history of tight ends changing teams in free agency with these big money deals is not good. But that is very different from a guy going there, getting a small role, and then getting extended. Obviously, Schultz has come out, you know, kind of not exactly throwing the Cowboys under the bus, but talking about how much more focused Houston is on, you know, just the football side of things and not exactly selling tickets and stuff like that as much as Jerry Jones and the Cowboys. But again, Dwayne, however you want to harp on it, whatever we thought last year, the fact of the matter is Dalton Schultz as CJ Stroud's number one tight end going into 2024, at least for this year, man, gonna be really tough to keep him out of that top 12.
Yeah, I think he's borderline tight end one. Like when you look at his profile, and you guys can go check it out over at fantasylife.com, like, you know, Ian's gonna have an article up, but I've got one already up on tight ends. And it looks at like, what are all the most important things for tight ends first? Like, that's how I start the article. So then we can then grade the guys that are available, basically. And it also talks a little bit about what changing teams does to these guys. And I tried to do it from a little bit different lens because I know how Ian approaches it. So I did it more from just looking at correlating and different stats and things like that. So you guys can go check it out. I won't go through all of that here, but like the nutshell version of it is like in a PPR format, this type of tight end can be a tight end one. If you're playing in a standard league, you're not probably going to like having Dalton Schultz. He doesn't give you a lot of big plays. He's not going to give you a ton of big yards, which was really what, to be honest, you were harping on him about last year, Ian. You didn't know how much he really added after, you know, you get the ball in his hands. The problem with that analysis is that, well, that's a lot of tight ends. There's only a few that really can earn targets and give you a lot. Yeah. All the rest are, oh, they're athletic and they can't get on the field like Gerald Everett, or it's Dalton Schultz. He's on the field all the time. He earns targets, but he doesn't do a ton with them. So it's just kind of the nature of the way the position works. Now, maybe that's changing a little bit because I do feel like this is the richest we've been, like from a tight end standpoint in the league right now, thanks to what came in last year, and this year we'll get Brock Bowers. So maybe that changes a little bit for at least a brief period of time, but typically, when you look at this profile, is really a borderline tight end one. And the other challenge I think that we have here is that you still have Tank Dell and you still have Nico Collins. And I don't think that Dalton Schultz is going to suddenly leapfrog both of those guys. There's also a chance that we get regression from CJ Stroud. That doesn't mean CJ Stroud is going to be bad, but he just had an unbelievable year one. So even if he went down a little, he would still be good, a good quarterback in the NFL in year two. So I think once you put all those things together, I think Schultz is a borderline tight end one. I agree. It's going to be pretty tough to keep him out of the top 12, but I think the target competition is enough that I wouldn't mind ranking him 13th, 14th. Maybe he ends up 12th. Last year, I had him in my top 10, but it's because I didn't believe in Nico. Well, we liked Nico Collins. We never thought he would do what he did.
Yeah, right? we didn't know this was coming.
We didn't know that Tank Dell would do what he would do. So now that I know those things, it's hard for me to rank, honestly, Dalton Schultz as high as I had him last year. So I'm going to be a little below where I was last year on Schultz. Now, what I will say is, if for any reason Nico Collins or Tank Dell go down and they miss time, well, then suddenly you probably have a mid-range tight end one on your hands. And so, like, you got to kind of weigh all those things because there's a lot of injuries. We'll probably face a game or two, maybe more, at some point in the season where you don't have one of those two wide receivers. So you're gonna have certain weeks where you're gonna get more out of Schultz. But like, if I'm just going wire to wire with it, I think he's borderline tight end one. I'm gonna call him a high-end tight end two.
Some of the names that are definitely ahead of him: Sam Laporta, Travis Kelce, Trey McBride, Mark Andrews, give Dalton Kincaid benefit of the doubt, Buffalo offense and all that. George Kittle, Evan Ingram coming off that really big year. Tight end nine's probably about the highest you could rank them. Look, TJ Hawkinson is, from what I've been reading, probably not going to be back until the second half of the season. Otherwise, he would be there. But he's right there, he meaning Dalton Schultz, right there at David Njoku. Probably going to give Kyle Pitts the edge because we do this every freaking year. Yeah, we're back in on Kyle Pitts again. I hate it too. Brock Bowers is going to be interesting depending on where he lands. Jake Ferguson, Dallas Goedert, Cole Kmet. I don't think, Dwayne, he does enough to exactly be like for sure in front of all those guys, but that's about the tier.
And feels like a tier though. Yeah.
Feels like a tier. And to your point, I mean, I do remember there were times last year, like especially after Tank Dell got injured, where, hey, all of a sudden you got some bye weeks. We're talking about Schultz as a top six tight end. So he does have that, you know, factor where I don't think every tight end does, where he's in a good enough offense where if you do knock down one of the wide receivers, we can actually expect Schultz to step up and, you know, hopefully provide some hidden upside.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the key with really all those guys in that range. Yeah. I mean, Dallas Goedert's the same thing. If Devonta Smith or AJ Brown miss time, and we saw this last year, like Dallas Goedert suddenly becomes, you know, worth more. Now, I think Goddard's a better talent than a guy like Schultz.
Yeah.
But we don't have to get into all that. I think there's a lot of similarities with the guys in that range. And that's probably, I might slice that tier a little different, but it's, we're pretty close.
Pretty close. Okay. I agree. Let's talk about a few other tight ends potentially, because question number three, again, I mentioned it's a pretty weak class overall. Are there really any additional free agent tight ends we should be overly excited about? Again, one of them, Dwayne, was Jonnu Smith, who ended up signing with the Miami Dolphins today. Arthur Smith in absolute shambles over there in Pittsburgh over that. But again, removing him from the table, it's not like we were overly excited anyway. There's Hunter Henry. There's Noah Fant. We can go down and look at, you know, Mike Gesicki. Jimmy Graham's out here in the year 2024. Dwayne, get excited about that. But man, even like going down, okay, you know, hand up, guys, I've been wrong about Irv Smith Jr. enough over the years. We're not going down that road again. Harrison Bryant, former Mackey winner, you know, shout out Evan Silva, Will Disley, if you squint hard enough, has some nice efficiency stats. But really, Dwayne, it's tough. I guess Noah Fant would be the one we're most excited about, but even then, it's one of those situations where if he doesn't land in a Cincy or even a New England place, I just think we're probably going to get what we've gotten throughout most of his career, an efficient, you know, secondary option in an offense.
Yeah, I would have made it Jonnu had Jonnu been released already, like when I did the article, but he hadn't. So, and he's already signed, so it doesn't matter. So I would say that he would have been the next one on the list, but Noah Fant is the next guy I have. Now, look, he's never broken out. He's never done anything. You know, he was a number 20 pick in 2019, but you know, his own team that put that draft capital into him was willing to trade him away. So I feel like there's a lot of things negative for Fant. I don't know how much we can count against Fant that once he got to Seattle, he had to play in a rotation, just because it feels like Pete Carroll just jams that no matter what. Now
they always
Carroll, obviously moving on, but that was a struggle, right? When you have to share with two other tight ends, not just one, you've got Colby Parkinson plus Will Disley. That's a bit challenging. So what I would say about Fant, like Gerald Everett is a poor man's version of Evan Engram. Well, then that makes Noah Fant a poor man's version of Gerald Everett. Like, so they're similar archetypes, right? These are guys that can give you yards after the catch. And I really do think that when you look at Noah Fant, like there are some positives. So in 2020, he had a 17% target share. That's tied in 7-9 worthy based on data over the last 3 years. 22% targets per route run. That's tied in 4-6 worthy based on this, on the same data. 12% air yard share. That's low. But again, he's a guy that works underneath the coverage, going to run a lot of these little drag routes. You want to get it to him early, like Evan Engram, and then let him run after that. But 1.64 yards per route run in 2020, you know, that's borderline, that's tight end 4-6 territory. And then in 2021, he was really close again to all those same marks. So yeah, we haven't seen that since 2021. But again, he landed in the spot where he had all, there was this ton of rotation going on. So I feel like there's just enough, and you said it the right way earlier. Like if you squint hard enough, you know, I remember when, you know, I used to have to go hunting all the time with my dad, and like the sun would just be coming up and I'm staring, I'm like, is that a bush or a deer? You know, like, I don't know, if I stare long enough, that bush becomes a deer. So if you look at Noah Fant long enough, you know, maybe he becomes a tight end, Ian, that we can use, but he would definitely be the next name. Cause when I look at the other guys, like Hunter Henry, you know, he could do it if he catches touchdowns, yep. But it's not, but the profile's not great. Mike Gesicki, you could say some similar things to him as you would Noah Fant. He's different. He is more of the vertical guy, not the guy that works under. But I think of all these guys, when you look back to college through what we have so far, if I'm really stretching it, Fant is the one that has the things that make me think, so you're telling me there's a chance. He's the guy that does that.
Again, if we were having this conversation 2 years ago, I think a lot of the data points would be stronger for Hunter Henry and Mike Gesicki. But, you know, 2 years have happened. They have not been doing good, and they've really been in situations where we would have expected them to be able to demand more targets than they were actually able to do in the first place. So it is Noah Fant. And, yeah, Dwayne, it just kind of comes down to that idea where, you know, I'm slowly but surely learning the McFarland, you know, philosophy over the years with, you know, just earning targets really is more of a skill that I think we give it credit for. And that's where, you know, someone like Noah Fant, I think in the past, you know, my previous mistakes, and how many times can I bring up just different tight ends I've been wrong about over the years, but the Chris Herndons, the Irv Smiths of the world, I found myself, you know, looking at the yards per target and some of the things they've done with the football, and probably not hard enough at, well, you know, how come these guys weren't able to get the football more often wherever they were? So when I do see stats like over the past 2 years, only George Kittle, Travis Kelce, and Dallas Goedert have averaged more yards per target than Noah Fant, I get excited. But then I see, you know, among 27 qualified tight ends, that he's 23rd in terms of targets per route run. So again, Dwayne, I don't think Noah Fant's bad. And let's face it, you know, you start throwing darts at any tight end to come out of Iowa over the past decade, more of them are going to be good than bad. But it does seem like, again, if we had to go ahead and go on a limb here, Noah Fant, probably a good, not great NFL tight end. And that's fine.
Yeah, he's just a guy, like, if you're doing best ball drafts now, you're throwing a dart, you know, at the end of a draft. Like, he's a name. I really would like to see the landing spot. There's not a ton of places where I could really see Fant landing. That's the problem. Yeah. And, you know, we already had to squint really hard for Gerald Everett. Well, now we got to squint, like, even harder for that to work out for Noah Fant. So even though he's available and he could potentially find an upgrade situation, it might still require, like, an injury to a teammate that's already would be in front of him on a depth chart. So I think landing spot, you know, obviously could change our minds a little bit about it, but that's a pretty tight needle to have to thread, you know, given his profile, where he's at in his career, and then the places that he could go to.
Fun tight end talk there, but yeah, you know, not going to exactly bore you guys with another 30 minutes about Will Dissly and people like that. With all due respect to Will Dissly, of course, let's talk about a potential big name moving on in the quarterback market, Dwayne. That is Kirk Cousins. Question number four, how would Kirk Cousins to the Atlanta Falcons change our thoughts on Drake London and company? So this is not a given, but I believe the latest DraftKings odds actually did have Cousins now as the favorite to take his first snap of next season in Atlanta. Yes, he is going to be, I believe, 36 years old by the end of 2024. He's also coming off a right Achilles tear from the research I've done from a bunch of smart learning doctors. This is actually quite a bit more significant than Aaron Rodgers' tear. If you think about it, two quarterbacks both throwing right-handed, you know, you're planting off your right foot. You're putting far more pressure on that than your left Achilles, which is what Rodgers actually tore. So not a guarantee that we see Kirk Cousins back at 100%. And some of the stuff I believe Dr. Jesse Morse in particular was pointing out was that he could see this impact in Kirk Cousins almost a bit similarly to what we saw Joe Burrow dealing with early in the 2023 season when he was battling through that calf issue, also again on his back plant leg. So again, Dwayne, not exactly expecting Kirk Cousins to immediately be 100% if he does go to Atlanta, but come on, man, give me 85, give me 90% Kirk Cousins. I still got to think that that's going to be an upgrade for guys like Drake London and Kyle Pitts relative to what they have seen in the Desmond Ridder and Marcus Mariota experiences. So with all that in mind, you know, we don't need to caveat every single thing we say about Cousins now with this injury. We're all aware of it. If we do get a better version than, you know, something close to 2023 version of Kirk Cousins in Atlanta, Dwayne, how does that change the prognosis for guys like London and Pitts?
Well, yeah, it's big because I do think that Drake London with a good quarterback has a chance to be a top 12 NFL wide receiver based on the things that we talked about just a minute ago that you mentioned, his ability to earn targets, you know, his air yards look good as well. Like he's got some wide receiver one worthy type of data points and, you know, worst case, like wide receiver two. I think it worked if with Kirk Cousins, if he's playing worst case, Drake London's a wide receiver two this year, you know, best case, he becomes a wide receiver one. Now I will say that I went back and I studied like all of the biggest swings basically in yards passing per game. First of all, I went and looked at quarterbacks and figured out which stats are the most sticky for them year over year that also matter to wide receivers. And it's nice when these things are really simple. It's easy. It's passing yards per game. That's really their most stable stat that also impacts wide receivers. And so once I was able to isolate down on that, I went and looked at these swings, right? And passing yards per game, changing in big ways for teams from year to year, for whatever reason, a quarterback injury, a quarterback trade. It can sometimes be like Kyle Shanahan leaving the Falcons, going to the 49ers. That was a big impact on Matt Ryan the next season and Julio Jones. But it's interesting, like the teams that see the biggest jump. So say you gain, you know, 50 yards passing per game. Those guys are typically picking up 1 to 1.5 fantasy points per game. What you really don't want, though, is the negative situation. It is way worse. So if you've got a team that loses 50 yards passing per game, on average, that wide receiver loses 2.35 fantasy points per game. Now, that's using PPR. If you get even further down the list, right, minus 70, minus 80, that would be minus 3.25. And that's the territory we could be looking at if you look at, you know, the Vikings and they decide they're going to move on from Nick Mullins. Nick Mullins actually is a really good yards per game guy. So the problem is he turns the ball over all the time. And I don't think the coaching staff wants him on the field. So I think they're going to want a different quarterback if Kirk Cousins leaves. So I think the flip side of this coin is, man, should we be taking Justin Jefferson in the top four picks? You know, I know a lot of people that are still have him ranked number two in their wide receiver rankings. I don't think you should be doing that right now. Justin Jefferson, if they got someone like Baker Mayfield, say they got Russell Wilson, I would be anticipating a 20 to 40 yard drop in passing per game versus what we've seen from Cousins. Now, that's based on the last three full years these guys have had. So I didn't count against Baker the year that he bounced around with the Rams and the Panthers having to learn new playbooks. But that alone would probably push, you know, Justin Jefferson down to like mid-range wide receiver one territory, right? Yeah. But if they somehow end up with Jacoby Brissett or they have to start a rookie, especially if the rookie is not a first-round pick, I mean, we could be talking 3 to 5 point drop in fantasy points per game for Justin Jefferson. Look, I get it, guys. He's still awesome. Talent is still the number one driver, and we still love it. But here's the thing, Ian. When I looked at these numbers, it wasn't just that, oh, there's some examples here. Like, I have great examples for you. Like T.Y. Hilton, when he lost Andrew Luck, and he went over to Jacoby Brissett, minus 4.6 fantasy points per game. This thing is real. And the biggest thing that I notice is it's not just some guys, Ian. So it's impacting everyone. So if you look at that minus 50, 86% of the wide receivers that went down by 50 yards passing per game, 86% of the guys that were in the sample, their points per game went down. So it's not like it's half and half, but there's a couple of big outliers that make that average number look bigger. No, most of these guys are taking a hit.
86 right? Freaking percent most, not even like 60.
yeah. No, and you know how this works. We do these kind of studies all the time. It's rare to get numbers that strong.
Yeah.
And if you just look at passing yards per game and you just go correlate it year over year to fantasy points per game for wide receivers, you're not going to see this data. What you have to do is you have to go really break it down and bin it out, like mm-hmm. into these buckets of how many yards per game they went down and how much that impacted wide receivers. I was honestly surprised with what I found, because the previous research I had done had always just been passing yards per game for a team. And I'm on the record as in the past saying, I don't really care about how good the quarterback is unless they're terrible.
Yeah. Well,
this kind of changes my mind. Like, it still is mostly, is the quarterback terrible? But I have a little bit of a different view, and I care a little bit more about the quarterback than I did like at this time last year.
To be fair to Jacoby Brissett, he's been quite a bit better these last 2 years compared to early career, which, you know, I know you were talking about the T.Y. Hilton years, 100% with you there. But the problem is, a lot of steam we're seeing right now is that J.J. McCarthy could be in play as a top 10 pick. And guess what, people? Top 10 picks rarely are on the bench long. So again, it's not one of these things where I think we're talking about, you know, Jefferson falling off a cliff. I think your entire point, Dwayne, was that he goes from being arguably the wide receiver one just to more of a guy that's, you know, maybe close to the wide receiver 10. And when we look at, again, the top guys that he's in competition with, CeeDee Lamb, Tyreek Hill, Ja'Marr Chase, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Puka Nacua, AJ Brown, Garrett Wilson, Nico Collins, like every single one of them, even if we are living in a Jacoby Brissett, JJ McCarthy world, I mean, every single one of those wide receivers has a far better and more confident QB situation. So no, Justin Jefferson round two, like, yeah, that's fine. We'll take that on. The dude's an absolute baller. And we even saw during the final 4 weeks of last year, wide receiver 21, wide receiver 7, wide receiver 34, overall wide receiver 1 finishes. I'm certainly confident Jefferson can keep on keeping on to a certain extent with the new QB. But again, Dwayne, you're paying a pretty freaking high price to find out right now.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway is there's just no point right now, if you're drafting, taking him over Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb, or Ja'Marr Chase, in my opinion. And then we see where the dust all settles. If Kirk Cousins comes back to Minnesota and we're feeling really good about his health, I'll rank Justin Jefferson as my top wide receiver. Like, I think he's the best wide receiver in football right now. So yeah. I'm with you. I think he can overcome things, but there's a video that'll be hitting YouTube if you guys want to really hear like this all in more depth. I broke it down into two different groups. If Cousins leaves, here are the two different groups of quarterbacks that he could get and how much that would potentially impact, you know, his fantasy output. So you guys can watch for that. It should be up like the next day over on Fantasy Life on YouTube. So you can see it there. But in a nutshell, like, it's not ideal.
Couldn't agree more about the Drake London love, though, and potential for him to ascend. I have done 12 drafts so far in this offseason. I literally, Dwayne, they just make my time go by so much faster when I'm on the treadmill trying to get through that. Like, for me, it's like, even if I am burning money, hey, it makes my, you know, hour on that thing.
I do that, but I'm outdoorsy and I start walking in the middle of the road, which can be dangerous. I start like drifting.
You start getting chased by stray dogs and got to deal with that going on. But in those 12 drafts, Dwayne, I got 3 wide receivers tied for my heaviest exposure. two rookies in Roman Duze and then Brian Thomas Jr. and none other than Drake London. Been happy to scoop him up in round four, round five. And I think it's a point you made earlier this year when we were talking about Travis Kelce going like a round four. If you are sick enough or just, you know, trying to be healthy enough to be drafting right now, these are the sort of guys that you should be taking because, again, they're one move. And in this case, one move that we feel pretty confident about happening away from skyrocketing up in a major way.
Yeah. I think you hit it the nail on the head. Like if you're drafting right now and your plan is to draft a bunch of teams, like I really do think you should take some time to sit down and consider the guys that could move up the most if things go their way. And also guys that have the most risk that could be going higher. Justin Jefferson is a great example of that. You know, to me, you don't have to worry about drafting Justin Jefferson right now. Let's say that Kirk Cousins re-signs with the team. Guess what? You're probably going to get to draft him around where he's going now. But if Kirk Cousins doesn't resign, I do think Justin Jefferson is going to move down the board a little bit and you're going to get a chance to draft him cheaper. Drake London's the opposite. If Kirk Cousins goes to Atlanta, Drake London, what's his ADP right now, Ian? Where you get him again?
Drake London, let me check on that. It's like mid wide receiver 20s almost.
So you're getting him like round four?
Let's see.
On underdog, you may.
Wide receiver 26, round four. Yeah.
Yeah, round four. So he'll move into round three. For sure, if Kirk Cousins signs there. I what this is telling me is that the market's a little split on Drake London. I thought he might even be a little further down, but I got to remember on underdog, all the wide receivers go early anyway. So if you guys are drafting and not so much worried about best ball and like in normal fantasy draft land, like Drake London probably would be going around 7 or 8, but this is underdog.
So. And again, take it with a grain of salt. We realize it is March, guys, but hey, it's better than completely, you know, guessing. So we got enough sickos in the lobbies right now. I think we can at least have, hey, again, directionally accurate ADP yes. data from that. Final point with Kyle Pitts, Dwayne. I know a lot of people, it's just like one of two things. You're either just completely back on him. He had 1,000 yards as a rookie. What more do you people want? Or you're just sick and tired of having drafted them too highly year after year after year. And yeah, guess what? It actually has only been 3 years of that. Feels like far more. So I think the interesting point with Kyle Pitts is not only the quarterback upgrade we're getting, but, you know, low key. Oh, hey, by the way, in the middle of last season, guys, it wasn't just an ACL repair. We also had the PCL and, you know, MCL damage going as well. I believe it actually was no MCL, just ACL and PCL. But whenever we have extra L's being added on than just the ACL, it does prove to be problematic. And just from watching the film, Dwayne, like I did not see the same athlete in Kyle Pitts last year that was on display during his rookie and even second seasons there. Pre-injury in the NFL. So thoughts on Kyle Pitts. Again, someone who, especially man in dynasty land, we're seeing him as a tight end 7, tight end 8. I mean, I think that's about where he went in the ongoing startup I'm in right now. He's a guy who, hey, if we see week one come, Kirk Cousins is there, arm strength looks fine, Kyle Pitts goes for freaking, doesn't even need to be that crazy, 75 yards and a touchdown. There's going to be some reason to warrant ranking him as a top 3 tight end the rest of the way. Seems like maybe a decent discount to grab it these days.
Yeah, I mean, look, his targets per route run came down last year at 18%, but to your point, like that could be due to the injuries, right? And he's really been exceptional. Like if you put all of his first 3 years together in the underlying data points, even though it hasn't necessarily shown up in the fantasy box score. I mean, if you look at air yards per game, which is one of the most sticky metrics for tight ends year over year, he's been fine. 28% of the air yards for the Falcons, which is crazy. That's the most by any tight end last season, even though he was playing with an injury. I think he's still a very unique kind of player. If he can get back to 100%, I think he's a complete mismatch. And whenever you get a coordinator change, like what we're going to get with Zach Robinson, I think that that's another potential thing that could really work out well for Kyle Pitts. You know, can he stay on the field for 80% route participation? If he gets that, plus he gets Kirk Cousins, like Kyle Pitts, it won't surprise me at all, Ian, if Kyle Pitts finishes at like the tight end 2. Like tight end 1 would be in his range of outcomes. Am I going to tell people to draft him as a tight end 1? No. But if he gets those two things to go, you know, his way, then he's going to have the upside to potentially challenge for that.
I don't think Sam Laporta and Trey McBride are like in a completely different stratosphere as Kyle Pitts in terms of just being a good NFL tight end. If you want to say they're better, go right ahead. I think Sam Laporta, especially after what he did as a rookie, like he probably deserves the benefit of the doubt there. But yeah, with Kyle Pitts, really more of an Arthur Smith and then Johnny Smith coming in issue with the injury. Again, when we are trying to go back to the well with someone like this, I would like to have enough differentiating factors to feel confident in change occurring. And I think with Kyle Pitts, we do have that going for us. Guys, before we get going on to questions 5 through 8, I want to give a quick shout out to our lovely sponsors over at DraftKings. What's up, basketball fans? The season is starting to heat up with bigger plays and even bigger wins. And with no more football, I mean, yeah, it's basketball season, everybody. Your Cleveland Cavaliers starting the Eastern Conference, coming back from 20+. I'm kind of sad, Dwayne. I'm spending my Sundays now watching a lot more like Ohio State and Cleveland Cavaliers basketball. It is not the same, but it's better than nothing. We haven't even had spring football start yet. So what else are we going to do? And what else are you going to do other than continue to love the fine folks over at DraftKings? Because we have teamed up with DraftKings to have a brand new way to play daily fantasy sports. With DraftKings Pick 6, all new customers get a 100% deposit match up to $100 and Pick 6 credits when you simply deposit $5 or more. You hear that, guys? $5 or more, 100% deposit match, up to 100. Great day to be great. And you can get in on the action right now. Getting started is simple. Just got to download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and sign up using promo code, wait for it, questions. The crown is yours. Again, getting started is simple. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app and sign up using code questions. Select 2 to 6 basketball players and choose if they're going to have more or less of a stat. Track your lineup and compete against others for a shot at huge cash prizes. Dwayne, you're a Texan. Luka, Kyrie, you watch Mavs games? What are we doing?
Yeah, I love both of those guys. I don't get to watch that many Mavs games because, we're working football all the time and I do have a family. But it's a good time, to be watching offensive basketball, at least in Dallas.
Dude, my dad took me to the Ohio State Michigan basketball game. Good seeing Ohio State beat that damn team once in the last freaking however many years. And I know it's not the sport I would have preferred, but Ohio State wins by like freaking 30 points. That was great. But I bet Ohio State to, cover. And then also the over. Dwayne, the over hit when the Michigan dude down 30 with 5 seconds left, literally pulls up from like 5 feet in front of half court and then just drains a three. Fans have been leaving for freaking the last 15 minutes. Now I'm just screaming in the nosebleeds about the overhitting here, looking for people to high five. So for that, for once, thank you, Michigan. And again, thank you over at DraftKings. Again, guys, at the DraftKings Pick 6 app, sign up using code questions and you can get one hell of a deal to, just go ahead and enjoy the day and enjoy some good old basketball more than you usually might. Back to action, everybody. We had some of the marquee free agents, already not exactly even make it to the open market, specifically one man out of Tampa Bay. Question number 5, Mike Evans is back in Tampa Bay. Will Father Time continue to F right off, Dwayne? I know you've done some good research already about age and wide receivers, and it's one of those things where a bit of it can be survival bias. I know I've posted some age charts, over the years that, guess what, guys? There's far less, 30-somethings that are posting top 12 fantasy numbers than 20-somethings, but there's also less 30-somethings overall in the league than 20-somethings in the first place. So based on what you've seen, Dwayne, like coming from a guy like a Mike Evans who has been producing at a high level, like is there really any reason to expect this steep drop-off in him when we don't have an injury present, when we probably won't have a quarterback change present? And nowadays $52 million over 2 years, Mike Evans seemingly pretty happy with life.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to give up on Mike Evans. Look, it is true that eventually like these guys all reach a cliff, but we're not really good at predicting when it's going to be. And the data tells us, to your point, there's less guys scoring in the top 12, but it's only because there's less in the league. But when you focus on these wide receivers that are in that 29 to 30, we'll go 31 to 32 age group because that's where Mike Evans is. And we just isolate to them. The main thing I want to know is like, are they in a good role, right? How many of them reach at least 400 routes, like 76%? So that's really good. And they average 12.2 fantasy points per game when they reach 400 routes. Well, if you look at wide receivers that are age 25 to 26, guess what they score per game when they reach 400 routes on average? 12.2. So really, there's not a drop-off. Like the real drop-off happens in age 33, 34, 35, 37. And anywhere between 33 and 37, you could get an immediate cliff where you don't even see it coming. Like, and they could just be gone. So I think right now, Mike Evans is still shy of that. And I would say that if you hear anyone talking about age with Mike Evans, based on his profile, based on the data, I would say that that's something you don't want to overweight. Like if it's a tiebreaker between two guys you really like and one's 27 and one's 31, go with a 27-year-old. But don't push Mike Evans down a whole tier on your board because you're worried about his age.
The crazy thing about Mike Evans, I'm not trying to insult what the guy did last year. He was really freaking good. You don't get 1,255 yards and score 13 touchdowns without being able to get open a lot. But, Dwayne, I mean, you watch those games. with Evans, he was actually more of the culprit on missed opportunities than Baker Mayfield, which was never a sentence I thought I'd be saying out loud, but there were some bad drops on film last year. And hey, we're not worried about the drops being sticky. Guess who led the NFL in drops last year? Puka Nacua. And guess what? We don't care because it's usually more of a factor of getting a bunch of targets in the first place. But again, I think there's arguably, if you just go back and watch again, all the targets from Baker to Evans last year, just Evans playing a little bit better just with the hands, which we know he has. I think we could actually see, you know, maybe not a better season because this just was pretty much the second most prolific season we've seen Evans have, period. But I really don't think that 2023 baseline is something that he's going to have too much of a problem overcoming here in 2024. So, hey, Evans, hopefully back reunited with Baker Mayfield. It is wild, Dwayne, just how much of a, like, Baker Mayfield was in the open market last year. The best deal he could get was 1 year, $4 million. And now we're like, come on, Tampa, re-sign Baker. What are you waiting for with this? I mean, hey, it is going to be good news for Mike Evans. And hopefully, again, good news for all of us fantasy faithful. Let's talk about another wide receiver. Again, we had the T. Higgins news break, you know, several weeks ago. We've already discussed that. But there was the official news that Indianapolis Colts wide receiver Michael Pittman will be back under the franchise tag here in 2024. Couldn't get a long-term deal done just yet. So, hey, Dwayne, whether or not they get that figured out remains to be seen. But just with Michael Pittman getting tagged, can he build on his 2023 breakout season? Because as much as we did have, you know, some good games in there when Anthony Richardson was under center, I do worry just a little bit about the lack of overall target competition, with all due respect to Josh Downs and Alec Pierce. And then also the fact that, hey, maybe having a Gardner Minshew under center was better for Michael Pittman versus someone like Anthony Richardson, who seemingly will be leading a bit more of a run-heavy offense. I mean, Jonathan Taylor was banged up for a lot last year. A lot of things went right for Michael Pittman, and I'm not saying he's not a very good NFL wide receiver, but are you going to be ready to pay up as a top 12 option here ahead of 2024, Dwayne?
I think he's borderline top 12, even in a more run heavy offense, because he had a 31% target share last year. That's Ooh. Well above the wide receiver one mark of 26% based on data since the last 3 years. He also eclipsed that in targets per route run, 27%. Wide receiver ones are typically around 26%. Air yard share was just over the 32% number for wide receiver ones. Michael Pittman was at 33%. Yards per route run, a little bit lower than what we're used to seeing from a wide receiver one. But he checks three out of the four most important boxes when we talk about data points that correlate strongly to fantasy points, as well as show stickiness year over year. So I think once you do that, it's like, okay, like, we're kind of going to nitpick him. Mm-hmm. And I agree, like, that could come in like on tiebreakers. Like, you get to, because every year is a little different, because you're going to have different groupings of players around someone, you know? So it comes down to who's going right around Michael Pittman that is a wide receiver. And then how are you creating your tiebreakers based on your concerns that you may have for the Colts offense, which I agree with. The challenge is when you go back to data to 2011, his average comp scored 17.2 fantasy points per game. Pittman had 15.5 last year. The average wide receiver finish for his comps, wide receiver 11. And most of his closest comps were possession wide receivers. So you hear a lot of people talk about the ding on Pittman. He doesn't stretch the field. Only 9% of his targets came 20 plus yards down the field. That's well below wide receiver one marks of 18%. But again, he makes up for it with such a huge target share. I think the thing that would concern me the most, Ian, on Pittman is if they somehow land a really good wide receiver in the draft. Now, if they landed another really good wide receiver that could now create more of a target competition, and you've got Josh Downs, who potentially takes another step forward next year, that would be enough to probably make me move him down a little bit. But right now, let me read you his comps. Keenan Allen, Larry Fitzgerald, Michael Thomas, and Robert Woods. It's really hard for me to fade a name that like has those comps. So I expect to be in on Pittman, but I think to your point, I will definitely be considering tiebreakers with the offense and then depending on what happens in the draft.
I will say, I mean, all the credit to Shane Steichen. I mean, it was so perfect for him last year, for him to go to Indy, lose Richardson. When Richardson was in there, I mean, they look good, but for him to, you know, go ahead and just field the league's 10th ranked scoring offense with a season of Gardner Minshew, again, incredible work in Indy. And then to watch Philly just completely fall apart down the stretch on offense without him calling plays there. Yeah, starting to think that Shane Steichen might know a thing or two about the X's and O's. But I like the comps you brought up, Dwayne. I think Matt Harmon, who's recently had some really good stuff on receiving perception, perception about these wide receivers in the news. He also echoed that thought on Keenan Allen. And just based on what we saw last year, man, hard not to. We've actually only had in NFL history, guys, like here are the only instances of a wide receiver having at least 8 catches in 10 plus games in a single season. Michael Pittman got there last year, 2021 Cooper Kupp, 2009 Wes Welker, 2005 Anquan Boldin. Oh my God, what a beast he was. 2015 Julio Jones, 2002 Marvin Harrison Sr., and then number one ever was 2019 Michael Thomas with 13 such games. So, hey, again, maybe life won't be quite as easy. He had a lot of things going his way, but hey, I said top 12 before Dwayne, and just early ADP, he's down there at wide receiver 19, so much more reasonable price, and I do think, you know, more so as a mid-tier low-end wide receiver too, I personally will be happy to go back to the well in a major way here ahead of 2024. Let's talk a little running back, though, before we get to some final predictions. Question number 7, everybody. How optimistic should we really be about Saquon Barkley moving forward? Dwayne, we were hoping to have, you know, our usual third amigo on the pod, Chris Allen, here with some insight from the NFL Combine. But sometimes, you know, you got to work. And Chris is enjoying lovely St. Louis in the meantime. So we'll hear from Chris again next week. But thoughts on Saquon Barkley, Dwayne, because I know you've had a great RB breakdown live on Fantasy Life for a while now. I just have my kind of storylines go live this week. And spoiler, man, you start going through running backs, and none of these guys were exactly very good in 2023, especially relative to what we saw from them even, you know, 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, so none of them are going to get big contracts. It's going to just be a matter of landing spot for these guys. Like, I've got Barkley still ranked as my top guy because efficiency can be very erratic. Yes, he was down last year, but even if he's bad from an efficiency standpoint, he's still probably going to be on the field wherever he goes. Now, we'll see what depth chart he lands on. You look at Rashad White last year, everybody like, oh my God, I don't care that the depth chart has nothing on it. Like, he's terrible. He sucks. Well, you get to a point where in round 7, you're like, he's probably going to get a lot of volume, right? And so you don't want to overspend on guys like that. You don't want to be drafting Saquon Barkley in round 2, regardless of his landing spot. Mm-hmm. But as people, you know, get sharper in fantasy drafts and they focus more on wide receivers, I think there's a chance that Barkley, you know, falls more down the board. And I just don't care as much about the efficiency. You need the efficiency to have those super crazy seasons. But the real thing you need is somebody that can play on passing downs. And we know that Barkley can do that. And I don't think he's a Christian McCaffrey plus level receiver. He's like 2 notches below that, but he is good enough that he can stay out there all the time and teams won't feel bad about it, right? And we've seen multiple coaching staffs now trust him playing that every down role. We've also seen multiple coaching staffs willing to trust him to hand him the carries inside the 5-yard line, which are super high leverage opportunities. That's where most of your rushing touchdowns come from. So I think based on those things, even though these guys aren't going to get that money, you know, as much money as like they would have in the past, I still think Barkley likely lands on a team where he's the clear number one back. And because we've seen him do all these things, and also like with running backs, you know, like the most efficient thing year over year is their attempts per game, right? And then their routes per game. You guys, like Ian said, you can go check all this out. I've got it all up over on Fantasy Life. You know, I broke that down for each position before I started, you know, really going through all these guys. But changing teams does matter. And one of the first things that we see go away when you change teams, if you're a player that had significant draft capital and then you leave that team to go to another and now you don't have that draft capital anymore, one of the bigger things we see go away is that passing down opportunity. So I would be leery if Saquon landed somewhere, Ian, where they've already got a proven passing down back. That would be the one thing that would probably slow me down a little bit more on him. But overall, like running backs that have carried big workloads go on to have an opportunity to do it again the next year. It's like one of the more predictive things that we have. Obviously, we'll see what depth chart he lands on, but I'm not that worried about the efficiency. It's just going to be all about the volume with Saquon. And like you always say, it'll come down to where's the ADP. If Saquon lands in a really good spot and he's a round 2 pick, I'll be passing. You know, if Saquon lands in a spot that people think is just average and now they're going to let him fall to round 6, I'll probably be in on Saquon Barkley.
Yeah. And there actually are enough landing spots, I think, to be reasonably excited about it right now before we know where he's going. I mean, 8 different teams in terms of their projected vacated RB, you know, opportunities, they have over 60% of their carries and targets open. Cowboys, Giants, Chargers, Eagles, Raiders, Vikings, and then also the Texans, who I know have been a real popular team linked up. Again, those guys are pretty much overhauling their backfield, even the Titans potentially too, although you got, you know, there's your pass down back, Tajay Spears, you might have to worry about a bit.
It sounds like the Texans are not interested based on news that came out of the combine, but yeah, we'll see. That was the one I wanted. That would have made me the most excited.
That one would have been sweet. But I will say too, because I mean, when I was looking at some of the stats, it's so tough because 2018 Saquon, I mean, his first year coming out of Penn State, like for my money's worth, I haven't been around as long as, you know, everyone and stuff, but my God, man, that is one of the most impressive running back seasons I have ever seen. Like prime young 22-year-old Saquon was one of the best running backs I've ever seen. So I almost wonder if it's a similar phenomenon as like, you know, trying to chase 2014 OBJ and like early career Giants, or even what Tony Pollard was doing in a lesser role. Like when you have these guys set the bar that high, I think we almost like just underestimate them moving forward because no, they're not reaching those heights again, but barely any players are reaching those heights in the first place. So again, maybe being a bit more lenient there, and especially over these past 2 years, new offense, let's face it, Brian Daboll, when he was in Buffalo, wasn't exactly getting much out of his running backs in the passing game. And when you got Daniel Jones and Tyrod Taylor more times than not, you know, scrambling instead of checking the ball down, lest we even talk about this offensive line minus Andrew Thomas, really hasn't been a good offensive environment at all. So kudos to Saquon for staying relatively healthy, you know, over these past two seasons, and still at least showing the capacity to be 80-90% of his former self. If we do find one of those workhorse-esque situations, that should be more than enough to give us some fantasy value in 2024 and hopefully beyond. Dwayne, we've reached our final question, and it is sponsored by our friends over at DraftKings. Again, can't say enough good things about them there. I'm going to be all over DraftKings this weekend. UFC 299, baby. And also shout out to our Betting Life podcast. You guys can find that on the Fantasy Life Network. Our own James Lynch actually joined Matthew Friedman to help break down that card. So James, one of the best in the business. And if you guys are diehard UFC fans like myself, you should be following him and giving that a listen. But Dwayne, again, last question here. What is one free agent signing that you would love to see for fantasy purposes? The floor is yours.
Yeah, I want Tony Pollard to come back to the Cowboys. Like if I got to pick anything, it's Pollard returning to Dallas. You know, I was pretty burned by Pollard. I was very high on him. He didn't just piss off people that listened to me. He also pissed me off because I had him on a lot of teams, Ian, that ended up not winning money, you know, because you spent a second round pick on a guy like Tony Pollard. It hurts. So I also understand why people were upset, but now going back and looking at it, I would do it again. I don't think there's anything to look at on Tony Pollard and say we missed, unless you just want to try to pretend that even though he was fully healthy, even by minicamp stuff, that we should have worried more about the tightrope stuff. And the tightrope surgery has had mixed results. Some guys have come back and been fine very quickly. Some guys haven't. So I haven't seen anything clearly telling me, oh my God, you've got to avoid a guy that had that kind of issue. So when I look at all that, he's still the kind of profile, even though he missed, that I want to be in on. He does the things we want. He can play on passing downs. He has shown in the past he can earn targets. He didn't do it last year. He took a double whammy last year. He couldn't score, even though he got most of the carries inside the 5 yard line. And then he took a dip down in the passing game, right? But if I look at the 3 year average before that, or still his 3 year average in targets per route run, is still 21%. That's running back one worthy. Yeah. So these things can kind of ebb and flow. They can go up and down. So I would love to see Tony Pollard come back to Dallas, get an opportunity to run it back. Maybe he's healthier this season. Maybe it was something to do with the tightrope surgery. And we're getting a massive discount on him right now in fantasy drafts. So I think that's the one. Like, there's a lot. There's so many that I could have picked here. But Pollard is the one that I went with because after doing my research, I'm like, you know what? We weren't really wrong on Tony Pollard. Sometimes stuff just goes, there's chaos, right? Mm-hmm. Things just go weird for you. But overall, historically, his kind of profile is still one that we want to bet on. So I would like to be able to run it back and get one more chance on that one, Ian.
I mean, just when we were drafting him happily in round two, Dwayne. We would have been drafting him happily in round one if we knew he was about to be. Yeah, if he was about to play freaking 17 games and get over 300 touches like he did out there. So I will say, you know, I've seen this floating around so much on Twitter. Yes, guys, Pollard said himself in week 11 that he started to feel the same. And if you want to go ahead and just hang your entire reputation on PFF grades, you will find that from week 11 through the wild card. Yes, he was PFF's number one rated rusher. I agree with the eye test that he got better, but man, I have a really hard time only focusing on that number when his yards per carry went up 0.1. His yards after contact per carry went up 0.3. His explosive run play rate went up 1.6%. I mean, his yards per out run went down. We all remember the freaking play against Miami.
I will say, if I was looking at it from that lens, I would weight the PFF rush grade more because they're accounting for the boxes and all that, right? Yeah. And doing research right now for other tools and things that we want to launch this offseason, and expected fantasy points is one of them. Like, the biggest thing for running backs is men in the box and distance to the goal, like that. And I sent you that data. Like, it's, there's not many things you get that are that clear. You're like, holy crap, it's green in the top left and the bottom right. Like, it's completely red. So I do think that PFF, you know, when you look at their grades, that's something they're accounting for, you know, is the box that he's running against and how does the blocking look in front of him. I'm with you though. Like, I you can't put all your eggs in that basket. You can't go all in on it. The way I look at it is, he had enough opportunity last year, and if they're willing to give it to him again, even if he's not great, I'm okay with that. Think about it. Last year, he had 1,317 scrimmage yards, Ian. Guess how many of that was off of his expected total?
Probably like 500 yards. He had the single
62
most.
62 yards.
Oh. 62. Oh, so it was just touchdowns then. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, okay. It was. So people talking about efficiency and worrying about it, it's like, okay, great. Yeah, maybe he was less efficient, but that was worth 6.2 fantasy points. That's it. It was all about the touchdowns. He scored 7.9 touchdowns less than expected. So if he scores those touchdowns, guess what? We're not even having this conversation. No one's talking about the tightrope surgery. No one's talking about the dip in the passing game. No one cares. Like, we would all be going, oh, yeah, Tony Pollard didn't quite live up to, you know, a mid-round two pick, but he was still worth somebody we should have taken in round three of fantasy drafts, which was still really good. So, look, we can slice and dice these things all sort of ways, but yeah, Pollard's my guy.
You guys heard from Dwayne Pollard, his guy, my guy, the big dog, Derrick Henry. Let's send him to the Baltimore Ravens. We've been waiting for this forever. Yeah, just give me Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson in the same backfield. See what happens. And guess what, everyone? We're about to finally see what happens with legal tampering season upon us here very soon. Make sure you check out Fantasy Life. You know, the podcast you're listening to right now. We'll be back with more breakdowns and also fantasylife.com for instant reactions. Very, very proud of the free agency tracker we're going to be putting together. So for Dwayne, I'm Ian. Thanks again for tuning into the Fantasy Life Podcast. And until next time, take care, everybody.